So today I'd like to talk about, as the title says, about some work in progress with Lev Borisov. So the title, I think, is Toric, Delim Mumford Stacks and Mirror Symmetry, or so what I'll try to describe is, an approach to homological mirror symmetry, which is definitely not new, but which shows kind of that the appearance that the toric stacks are something that one should consider. So, and the approach I'm going to take is kind of, I'll deal with the soft things that we kind of know how to do and just tell you about maybe the some things that we would like to do, but we either don't have the details or we can't do it or things like that. So so let me start with some kind of biased introduction. To homological mirror symmetry, because this was kind of the motivation for starting this. So, according to Kontsevich's way of phrasing mirror symmetry, the most general statement should be something like this: that if X say and Y are mirror Calabi-Yau manifolds, then there should be an equivalence of categories between the derived category of coherent sheaves on X and the so-called Fukaya category, or the derived Fukaya category, or something like that. So the way the conjecture is phrased here, well, I mean, the first question is, what are mirror manifolds? Well, the true answer to that, I don't know. So there is, I can't give you a definition, of course. So I guess the definition, the physicists, of course, have no problems. Knowing what the mirror manifolds, and from the mathematical point of view, I guess we have all sorts of examples and generalizations for this conjecture, but there is no definition. So what I will do, though, I will, as you'll see, I'll try to show some examples of mirror manifolds, some of them well known, and then what are these objects? The Fukaya category actually is not going to concern us too much, although it's always in the background there. So, yeah, it is symmetric. I mean, so then the it all should be also true that the derived category of coherent sheaves on Y is, well, I mean, yeah, if they're complex and things like that. So, so of course, for the symplectic geometry people, this is a very interesting object. I guess nowadays people believe that there is a definition. I will just say that briefly that the objects are supposed to be, well, even this is not completely clear, but let's say that they're Lagrangian. So Y comes with a symplectic form, so Lagrangian submanifolds here. And with some local systems on top of them. So let's say U1 local systems, and the morphisms have to do with Fleur cohomology. And of course, there are a lot of problems here. That's why I don't want to deal too much with this issue. But again, it's useful, at least for the introduction, to keep this in mind. Here, the objects, in the smooth case, one can think of the object as just complexes of vector bound, or bounded complexes of vector bundles. And the morphisms, at least for people who know what the derived category is, this is going to be totally unsatisfactory. For people who don't know, that's not going to mean anything. So that's a bad choice to do this. But anyways, I should, for example, if E1 and E2 are sheaves, then these are just Hom groups, X groups. So again, this is in the background of our story. And the kind of, from the physics, I guess, point of view, more a bit older, or classical even, point of view of on mirror symmetries. Of course, physicists always are concerned about the parameter spaces, and they like to, the phrase mirror symmetry actually in the beginning was kind of, in a way, phrased as an identification between two parameter spaces, when the identification involves computing the metric and all that. So the way they like to think about this, so this is just very schematic here. They do something like this. They say this is, I guess Cantaro now told us a bit about this Kähler, so-called Kähler moduli space. And here we have, so this is simply the moduli space of complex structures on X, on Y. Well, here we have this complexified moduli space for which, again, there is no mathematical, rigorous mathematical definition. And I guess there people have tried to give mathematical definitions. I guess in the end, Tom Bridgeland's work, one of the outcomes would be actually of giving a rigorous definition of this space. But again, we don't really know what this is. However, what we know from physics is that at least the local coordinate is something like this, is of the form B plus I omega, where this B is the B field that, as I said, Kentaro mentioned yesterday. I don't know if his coefficients were in R or in S1, but for us will be there. And this is the Kähler form. So this is kind of a local coordinate. So now, part of the mirror symmetry statement, again, is that these spaces are isomorphic, as I said, and the metrics on them are identified under the isomorphism. And, say if here there is the point that corresponds to Y, here we have a point that corresponds to X. Of course, in the moduli space, we know that in the complex moduli space, we have this discriminant locus, which is just describing it in general, it's a very hard problem, in fact, and there are many issues. You know, it may have many components, things like that. So not this space is not easy to describe, although understood, as I said. However, this one, as I said, it's even worse. So what happens if we start moving around in this space? Well, from the mathematical point of view, I guess we don't know. So for example, well, this has been studied extensively by people, but for example, you know, since this has to do with considering the Kähler form, if x and it may happen that x and x prime here, for example, are just two birationally equivalent models, right? So x and x, so x prime could be just another birational model. Sometimes it's smooth, sometimes it's not. So then one can ask the question, what happens if x prime acquires singularity, right? Well, this is not all, though. There are points, even worse points from the mathematical point of view, where we kind of lose contact with geometry. So the question is, what happens at these points, these sort of boundary points, which, as I said, there is no mathematical definition in some sense for the orbifold point or all sorts of things. So I guess nowadays people are trying to associate to points like this objects of the type of the derived category of coherent sheaves associated to X. So kind of our work is in this realm of trying to understand what happens if we move away from a region where X is smooth to a region where X prime acquires singularities, or even, as I said, to a region where things are even worse. So, however, what we do and what I'll show today, again, it's kind of soft. So it's just a way of, you know, confirming some things that we're knowing, but seeing that the machinery of these toric Dillon-Mumford stacks sort of works, and it's well fitted for this work. So are there questions? Okay. So right. I should also mention that, in fact, the homological mirror symmetry has been generalized to the case when, for example, X is a Fano, and then I guess here there is something which is associated to a Landau-Ginzburg model. So something that, again, Kentaro mentioned, where you have a superpotential and things like that. So this can be treated also with a bit, a part of it, as I said, with what I'm going to say. Okay. So the question, as I said, is kind of try to understand what happens when we move in geometry and, if you want, in you know, physics, what happens when you move between X and X prime, right? So kind of what we, if we expect that such a result holds, then we would expect that we would have a equivalence of categories between the derived categories of coherent sheaves on X and some the derived category of bounded derived category of coherent sheaves on X prime. And here I'm going to say what the Fourier-Mukai functor is in a second. But let me just draw this diagram, just to kind of, which will show kind of the plan of thinking about this problem. Okay, so it's no you can certainly move here to K theory, but perhaps that's easier to understand for people who know a bit about derived categories. You may know that even to come up with a Fourier-Mukai functor is a really good thing, because usually Fourier Mukai functors tell you something about birational geometry. So birational geometry is hard, finding non-trivial or new Fourier Mukai functors will be hard. And as I said, anything new learning in this way will be interesting from the point of view of birational geometry. So of course we can move here to the cohomology. And again, this is perhaps even easier to understand. So we kind of try to understand this map, and try to lift it to upstairs to a Fourier Mukai functor. So here comes the point where we would like to connect this with the other side of mirror symmetry. So of course, there are many ways to do this, but for those of you who were here last time when Theo Nutz talked, he described, I think he called it the J function. I'm going to call it, I think in the physics language, this is called the topological mirror map. Which goes here, for example, the periods of Y. So let me call it, say, phi, and let's call it phi x and phi x prime. Here are the periods of Y prime, where Y prime would be a point here. Something of this. So we know that the periods kind of characterize the variations of complex structures. So now understanding that, of course, it's not going to be an algebraic geometry problem anymore. It's just going to be an analytic continuation problem. So trying to do this, so of course these are supposed to be actually isomorphisms between the two for such that we get anything interesting here. And this, what's special about these is that, of course, that this diagram should be compatible with the monodromy transformations going on in both sides, right? So whatever... of course, this by kind of the analytic continuation is going to be compatible, because that's kind of by the tautology. So whatever we learn upstairs, if we can learn anything, as I said, by lifting this to higher and higher levels, it's going to have to do with mirror symmetry. And as I said, it will tell us something about geometry, right? So... okay, so what's the problem here? Well, this is all kind of nice and there are many things that I have to explain. For example, what's this map? And I will explain a bit of that. It's quite technical, but I will explain and try to give some examples. But the one serious problem we have, in fact, here is that what happens if X prime acquires singularities. So what if X prime if that happens, then the easy thing to notice out of this is that, for example, if you just take the simple cohomology, you're not going to have enough classes to actually get sort of all the periods here. So that's going to be a big problem. So basically, you cannot use this for anything, right? So then it turns out the kind of technical detail here is that, well, this will work if I add there the words orbifold, and if I, as I said, when x, at least in the good cases that I'm going to explain, when I replace by x prime by script x prime, where x prime is the Delaunay-Mumford stack associated to x prime. Right. Yes. Right. So, however, well, I'll say this in a second. You know, the right way to understand this is, in fact, not to work with Calabi-Yau, for which is the hypersurface or the complete intersection, but to work with what you would call the local Calabi-Yau, which is obtained by taking the toric variety and putting the corresponding bundle on top of it, so you get something that admits a non-vanishing holomorphic form. So that's the x from that point of view, and x prime, as I said, are going to be, for it could be, and it's, that's where we really understand the story, in fact, is in the case when x and x prime, as I said, are in fact these non-complete toric varieties. So, but I'll give an example. So, of course, then the questions are, how about this object and how about this object here, if we want to. So it turns out that none of them is well understood, for at least to my knowledge. Maybe someone can correct me here about the K theory of Delaunay-Mumford stack, the smooth Delaunay-Mumford stack, and the derived category. Anyways, this is not even understood in the case, let's say, when X is a smooth toric variety. In general, people really do not know what a nice algebraic description for that. In fact, I was looking today, I think the case of the projective case, when X is projective. So again, now I'm mixing things. I'm talking about toric variety, but I will explain why we can, at least at this level, we can do that. So so I was looking today, I think, in this paper of Katsarkov and Orlov, they actually described that derived category, rather this one, for the case of weighted projective spaces. So, Okay, so what I want to do next, then, is say a few words about these toric Delaunay-Mumford stacks and the orbifold Chowring, or the orbifold, or the associated orbifold cohomology. So I'm not going to make it too formal. Let me just sort of, since I don't know how much people know about toric varieties in general. So again, these have been stacks, of course, have been introduced a long time ago, but they, you know, the Borisov, Chen, and Smith have introduced kind of a machinery, if you like, for dealing with what they call the toric stacks. And in some sense, the whole point of this talk is that the toric machinery was very useful for the case when X was smooth. So all these proofs of mirror symmetry, of course, use explicitly the toric machinery. Well, it turns out that I think this machinery is also very useful. Maybe it's not that known, but it's useful. So let's say let N be a lattice. So, in other words, a free abelian group. In fact, if you look at their paper, in fact, they allowed N to not to be a lattice, to just be an arbitrary abelian group, so that corresponds in the stack language to having some overall stackiness, which of course is very important, but yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, if you're asking about terminology, from what I guess there are team stacks, which are they the most general or not? No, no. These are going to be, but these are going to be. Mine are going to be, anyway. So mine, you know, if you, for people who are geometers without the algebraic, again, I'm not going to, you know, orbifolds, this will be good enough in some sense. And I'll try to give some, you know, at least for the cohomology part, I'll try to give something which is clear, you know. Yes. However, there is some new ingredient that I'm going to explain in a sec. So So you know, if say sigma. So so far there is nothing new here. So let's say if we take sigma simplicial cone in N, then you know, you assign this affine toric variety to such a thing, and again, I'll make even this so the kind of this is the spec of so sigma is the dual cone, sigma check dual cone, and M is the dual lattice. So, for let's give an example of how this works. So I guess this is the first or the second example in Fulton's book. So, say if we take E2 and here something like 2E1 minus E2, then the dual cone is going to be something like this, generated by this vector. So I hope that's right. So we'll get the spec of so we see that this is a quadric and it has with a singularity at the origin. So again, there is nothing. This is again the old style of doing toric varieties. And when if you want to produce a toric variety globally, then you have to just make sure that these things, these affine pieces, glue together nicely. And you know, it turns out that the language of fans, it's wonderful, so it allows you to actually capture all the combinatorics of the gluing these pieces by that. So, okay, so what is a stacky toric fan? Well, a stacky toric fan, the only difference is that the vectors, primitive, the vectors that appear in the usual definition of a fan are, I think they're called primitive. So they're not integer multiples of any other integer vector. So for a statutory fan, allow generators to be non-primitive. So again, I'm lying here. In fact, if you, this is not enough. You have to really work with this, replace this n by not just an, free abelian group by an abelian group, but for us, this actually is going to be enough. So, for example, let's, you know, you could take, of course, everybody knows this is the P1, right? So the group action, right, is something like this. You could take, though, here to be 2E1 and minus 3E1, and you get the stacky P1. And I guess in this case, the action is going to be. So the easiest way to understand is, in fact, by using, to understand what this is going to do, in fact, to the, how the construction works, is by using this, the analog of Cox construction. So let me just briefly say how that goes in this case and what, and what's, for toric varieties. So what one does in the Cox quotient construction is something like this. So one consider this map, which sends where these VIs are the generators of the stacky fan. So this is going to be, well, it's important here to actually assume that, and I think they need to, yeah. Oh, definitely. Right. How about make this D? Because this is maybe going to be used more, so thanks. So what I think they need the assumption that phi has finite co-kernel. Because otherwise things don't work. Well, so if you go through the usual quotient construction, one, what one does, dualizes this map by applying the Hom of, with the Z on the second argument. This assumption that phi has finite co-kernel tells, shows that, in fact, this is going to look like this, where and let's call this phi dual, and let's call this the co-kernel of phi dual. Okay. So what one does, considers the group G, which is the morphism between K and C star So you know, clearly we get this map from G to C star of N. So you know, we just applied it in some sense blindly, the Cox quotient construction. This is called, I think, in linear algebra, the language, the Gale dual. However, again, it's misleading. The situation I'm presenting here is misleading because, in fact, they have to redefine this Gale dual for the case when these are not they're not just groups. So there is a bit more homological algebra involved there. So, then the space that Z actually acts, one defines Z to be, let me make sure that, so it's C, and let's call it V, a closed set associated to the fan sigma. I don't think I gave the fan a name. Oops, sorry for that. And so basically this is all the set of all Z1s Zn with a property that the set of Vj such that Zj is zero, is contained in a cone of sigma. So basically then the stacky toric variety is defined, and in fact, as it is known, the usual toric variety associated to the fan obtained from the stacky fan by just taking the primitive vectors along the generator, so we can definitely do that. So that really is and I think I need to put this in this case because in general this is not, it's going to be a categorical quotient, so we'll allow some singularities. So this is the coarse moduli space. And they construct this theory, and you know, they show that you can talk about substacks, closed substacks associated to cones. You can construct open substacks, and again, it, in order for the theory to be functorial, the definition has to be a bit more general. But, however, the main interest for them is to actually, as I said, compute this Orbifold Chow ring, or the Chern-Ruan cohomology, which in the end is a computation. It's kind of a level zero computation in Gromov-Witten theory, but it's quite tricky. So it's not just classical. In other words, not classical cohomology. So in order to do that, what we need one more notion. So given this, no, you don't need to. It's just no, this is the stack. This is the geometric image. Oh, you're asking about this? No, yeah, I thought he's asking about this. So that's a stack whose, they said, underlying variety is the usual simplicial variety. It has good properties. That's what matters. Oh, simplicial means that the fan I'm considering, all the cones of the fan are simplicial. So they're. Yes, I'm sorry. I should have said that. Yes. So, somewhere in the beginning. I mean, I just work with simplicial cones, or my maximal cones are simple. Well, I think you have to ask them, but I think things. I'm sure that if it did work, they would have done it, but there are. Right. Actually, I don't know the answer to that, but. Okay. So given such a simplicial fan, one can construct this, what they call the box of the fan, which is consists of the following things. So let me just denote the vectors. By Vj, so the box is consists of the vectors v in the lattice n, such that v can be written as a linear combination with rational coefficients, such that of these vectors, such that. So note, for example, that 0 is always in the box of any fan. If the fan is not just simplicial, but it's actually smooth, so in other words, if any cone gives a basis, then the box really is the the box really consists of just a zero vector. So the statement here in this context is that there is a one-to-one correspondence between these and what I guess the physicists call the twisted sectors. But in this language, zero is a twisted sector. So although zero is the untwisted sector, I guess. Zero is the. So, in other words, right. So, here? No. These are in the lattice. So, yeah, maybe I should. If I have this on the board, for example. So, for example, in this one, if you look at this cone, this is in the box. So the zero is the box, and this is in the box. And very easy. So, so then, okay, so So the twisted sectors, one way to think about them is elements G of the group such that so this observation, I don't want to, at least I don't want to misappropriate it, but I think the first place I've seen it is the student of Ruan, whose name is Podar. He wrote some papers on this. So, okay, so what do they do with these? So then, kind of, their result. Oh, do I have to stop it? Anyway, maybe I can. So their theorem is that the following. So what one can do, one can, so basically is their theorem gives a combinatorial interpretation of, if you want to call it like this, or as they call it, and the way they write it is something like this, and I'm going to explain in a sec what those are. So this is kind of some kind of deformed semigroup ring, and here there are the some linear relations of the following form. So and the deformed semigroup ring is generated by symbols of the form x to the n for n elements in, oh no, n, again I am running into this n problem, f to the p, x to the alpha, but the product operation is something like this. So x alpha 1 times x alpha 2 is x to the alpha 1 plus alpha 2 if alpha 1 and alpha 2 are in the same cone of n 0 otherwise. So for those of you who know more about toric varieties, this, in the case when, oh, this x here, of course, should be this. So what I was saying is for, in the case when, so remark, if x smooth, well, if X, the variety, is smooth, then this is really just the Stanley Reisner description of the cohomology. So this is what's interesting is that if you look at this represent this combinatorial definition, in fact, it's not hard to see. In fact, it's quite easy to see how this splits into sum, into a direct sum over the twisted sector. So this is split something like this in a sum over all the elements of the box. So I'll write here, this is the usual cohomology of and I'll explain in a second. So this is the variety associated to the fan, which is obtained from taking the regular fan associated to the stacky fan and quotienting out by this. So this is the cone, the smallest cone of X of sigma that contains this element of the box. So for example, in the example that I had, you just have to take the cone, the smallest cone, as I said, that contains it. So, you know, it's exactly what you expect, that the Chern-Ruan cohomology splits into a direct sum, as a vector space at least, as a direct sum over these fixed loci corresponding to, as I said, to those elements. Their theorem, of course, is much more powerful. So what they show, in fact, is that this here, isomorphic, is not just a vector space, it's actually the product structures are identified also. So this is, again, quite remarkable just because this is such an easy gadget to work with. So in this example, we have a perfect identification between the Chern-Ruan thing and this combinatorial representation, which we may call Stanley-Reisner representation or something like that. So. Okay, so I'm going to give examples. So now, our work, kind of, my collaboration with Lev, started by noticing that, in fact, these weights here that show up in this box have to do exactly with the monodromy. The monodromy representation of the periods around this, the components in the of the discriminant locus in the moduli space in the, you know, at the appropriate point in the mirror story. So what I would like to do next is try to explain how this works just by example, because otherwise, you know, the technicalities. I mean, maybe I'll say a few words about the general story, but so Kentaro, it's actually two. Okay.
We can. I
can try to do everything in 20 minutes, maybe, just to. I mean. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe people want to leave or something. So, because that's why people don't want to leave. If oh, I see. Okay, then we can take a 5-minute break, and people. So 5-minute break. I think there is one person who. One person who wants to smoke. Sorry? What this means?
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that, you know, look at this cone.
What is this?
QJ are just some numbers.
Oh, this is Q.
Okay, this is
This U. Okay, these are just numbers.
Okay,
I
understand. Two,
I was not sure then.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wrote two and it was.
Oh, I see what it is.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, two. Well, it makes sense. So this is maybe a Q, just a number.
I went to an error meaning, so I think that's how we were talking.
Yeah,
how do you do the Q?
For me, Q is more like, So, I was just wondering if it was something more complicated.
So I tried these days, in fact, to see if this construction, for example, or the quintet, for people who are in this matrix. I mean, that shouldn't be.
There's no extra.
No extra. That's why I'm saying that I'm going to look at the. Very usable kind of parameter.
What is
it? Sigma is the kind of ambient for it.
How long
is it? This is like over. So then I can do this. Then this experiment will be back. So, the level of current shouldn't be a problem. And with this kind of thing, we can tell how to move between normal and large.
Oh, in here.
Yeah, in this language. So, I mean, the question is, can we relate this language here with the matrix?
Well, this is like C5 mode.
So I'm just looking, I mean, this can be used just for the charges, to at least understand something about charges and how they change, and then maybe get more of that. So. Although, of course, I can take what's inside here, and inside, well, I guess, yeah, how the, I can't hear it hardly if I want to.
Thank you. I'll have to.
I will have to say a few words about this part with the period. So this story with hypergeometric functions, which is a bit messy. Everybody avoids it. And actually, as I said, Jonutz last time, he actually wrote down this function. But what I will like to do is to write the analog of this for the case when we replace this cohomology corresponding to a smooth, what they call phase, to with something in where the x prime is actually the stack associated to the toric variety, usual toric variety x prime, and this is the orbifold cohomology. So before I do that, I want to make this remark, because I've been talking about the toric varieties, and of course we have to understand how this is going to work. So the way I would think about this is the following way. So I have, in terms of, let's think about now in terms of old style toric varieties. So when I write x like this, not script x, I mean the old style toric varieties. So, you know, inside here we have a complete intersection, Calabi-Yau subvariety, which is, at least for this mirror symmetry procedure to work, kind of, we'd like, it has to have some further properties, good properties, in terms of what kind of intersection of semi-ample hypersurfaces or something like that. However, what people have been doing in this story, whenever they are faced with this issue, is to actually consider here so if X is the intersection, say, of E1 with EP, then we can actually look at this toric variety. So I'm going to write this as K, so the total space of this bundle, and in fact it has a property that it's canonical, a canonical bundle of this is trivial, simply because of the Calabi-Yau condition on the subvariety. So in fact, everything what I've said here, well, at least at the combinatorial level, goes through and while talking instead of this Calabi-Yau, rather about this toric variety with the trivial canonical bundle. So there is a construction that makes, you know, it's a very combinatorial construction that allows you to go from this fan to the fan of this. Is very easy, in fact. So, but, and I'll describe it in a second. So again, so in fact, you should keep in mind this. Of course, the properties here are very related between X and at least at this level of cohomology. The derived category story kind of changes, but not much. Well, no, the derived category story changes. The K-theory story doesn't change too much. So, okay, so how does this, what are these hypergeometric functions? These are these periods, right, on this side. So what I want to show is just a bit, at least, how this procedure works without going into all the details. So what people do when faced with such a problem, so the fact that this is the total space of a bundle has to do with the fact that one can consider the following what's called an A set. So consisting of vectors v1, vn inside n, such that they're all located in a hyperplane. So there exists some linear function here, right? So this is the origin. I mean, if you're used to this Batterev construction in toric geometry, in mirror Batterev construction, the convex hull of the polytope included in the hyperplane and the sort of projections of the vectors are going to give a reflexive polytope if we want to do mirror symmetry. So anyway, so what we're going to do, we're going to take a fan. So let's say if we denote this by delta, the convex hull, as I said, of the vectors in the set A, and we look at this cone, then the fans that we're talking about are going to be supported, fan sigma supported on K. So to such a story, we can associate it. We can associate, as I said, a toric variety, and in fact, we can even associate the hypersurface inside. The same story, in fact, that's how mirror symmetry works, allows us to, in fact, write combinatorially the periods for the mirror. So, and how do those look like? Okay, so this is going to be a bit messy, and again, I will have to lie a bit when I write this, but basically, it's something like this. I think phi. To make things clear, let me call this phi associated to the fan. It's going to be a sum over the periods . There are some parameters here, u1 up to un, the same number as the previous n. So what, as I said, what Jonutz wrote last time was the case when alpha, the only twisted sector is alpha equals 0, and his J series was what we would call here phi sigma 0. So if we want to, as I said, to use this orbifold construction, then we have to do it. And I'm just going to write the formula without saying too much, and then do an example just to. So each of them looks like this. It's a huge sum over L. L is the lattice of relations. So in other words, L is a vector L1 LN such that sigma LJ VJ is equal to 0. And what we stick in here is the alpha corresponding to the twisted vector, twisted sector, and an ugly product here. this is the gamma function and takes care of the factorials, as I said, that showed up in his talk. I'm just writing gamma functions because in general I want to allow this lambda. So what are the lambda j's that show up there? How should we view this one? The lambda j's, in fact, correspond to classes in this the lambda j correspond to vj, if you want, and they're viewed as being the generators of this you know, the ring, this Stanley-Reitner ring, or the orbifold cohomology that I described last time. last hour. So lambda j, I guess with the previous notation, would have to be called x to the vj, but it's kind of hard to write here another exponent in that expression. So I don't want to insist too much on this. No, it's a parameter. Yeah. So this series has values. I mean, u's are complex numbers. So u's are the coordinates on the moduli space of complex structures of the mirror. And lambdas are cohomology classes corresponding to the vj. So it's a cohomology value. This is like the j series that you gamma. Just the gamma function, formally if you want, initially. And then you can, you know, okay. So let me then say a few words about this series. So if you look at this, you know, think about lambdas as being just complex numbers, right? And this thing has no chance of converging whatsoever because we have a huge lattice. So think about just having a one-dimensional lattice. This would go from minus infinity to plus infinity. So there is no chance that it will converge. However, the magic of this is that when they're viewed here, when they're viewed as a series valued here, a lot of terms are going to cancel out. And what's going to survive are series. So, you know, take lambda as fixed, say, then what's going to survive are series such that the u parameters are parameters. So this would be the y. So the phi sigma is a convergent series around for u1 up to un around the point y. How should I phrase this? Around the point y in the mod. So this is what I have in this. That's what I said, that this is a useful picture to keep in mind. So this is now the moduli space of complex structures on the mirror. So these series, the u's are parameters here. Coordinates, sorry. In fact, they're not coordinates just like that. There is a torus action that cuts down the dimension, but let's ignore that for a sec. So these are coordinates there, and so this is a convergent series for u, for values of u around the point y corresponding to y, which is the mirror of x. Sorry for of x and this fan. Sorry for this. So they're only going to be convergent there. However, in that neighborhood, they're going to be honest series. So and there will be convergence. So in other words, we have all these points here in the moduli space of the mirror now, which correspond to different birational models of X, if you want. And depending on what fan structure you have here, they're going to converge either here or here or here or here. So they will not converge in the middle, though. So in the middle, things are actually messy. So in the middle, you have to use some integral representations to do that. So is that a bit? Yeah. To that power? Lambda j, as I said, think a bit. Yes, I haven't finished that. Yes, they are. Right, right. So if what you do here, you actually expand this as a sum in, as a power series in lambda and the lambda j's, and you know the first the phi, the zero coefficient is one series up to. So what I would like to notice here is the following thing, that if you think about the monodromy, well, maybe I should do an example, because this is, let me do an example, and then things will be much better. So let's take an example, so again, the strategy then would be to sort of see what happens if we do this, or sometimes, you know, go around, the discriminant locus, things like that, and give interpretations then in terms of the transformation in cohomology, and perhaps, if we're lucky, even at the level of the derived categories. So let me do one example. So let's take the following vectors, v0 to b. Zero zero one, v1 to b1 zero one, so this is the, if you, there are four vectors in the hyperplane x, the third coordinate equals 1, and immediately we can ask the question, what are the possible ways to, what are the, if you want, the birational models, toric birational models for this, for a toric variety whose cone supported on this, and you see easily that there is not much you can do. It's either this triangulation. So when you include this, the zero vector, or the one where we ignore it. Okay. What's the difference between these two? The difference is the following, that let's call this the difference is that while here the box of this guy is just the zero element, here the box consists, in fact, since now we have removed v0, consists of v0 and 2v0. So the box is three elements, right? So what are the rings, the two orbifold rings associated to these ones? So let's this is going to be C of x0, x1, x2, x3 with the property that x1 is equal to x1, x2, x3 is 0, x1, the linear relations are going to be x1 plus x2 plus x3, I guess plus x0 is equal to 0, x1 minus x2 is equal to 0, x1 minus x3 is equal to 0. So it's easy to see that this is in fact something like C of lambda quotient out by lambda cubed, while here we have x1, x2, x3 is equal to x0 to the third in this case. And okay, I guess my definition here was not complete. I have to add the fact that this is important, actually. Let's see. When I write this here, I have to add the fact that I'm summing all over those. That are generators of the fan considered. So that's why here this V0 is not part of the discussion. So, because otherwise this is not Cohen-Macaulay, so it's not gonna, it's not gonna have good properties. So this is, sorry for that. So this is gonna be then x1 plus x2 plus x3 equals 0, x1 something like that. And anyways, we see that in this case, this is again, it's the same ring, just written in a different way. Which is what we expect, as I said. Okay, so what about the series that are going to show up? So let me write those down. And then maybe I'll erase this. In their discussion, they were not concerned with this because they were not, they only had to write down the generators of the fan. But here we have to keep track even of those generators V's that have been removed. So that's quite important there, that addition. Yeah. Three what? Yeah. Right. Right, so this is the sum of. Right, so one is, if you want it written as in terms of the box, it looks like this: 1 plus x0 times 1 plus x0 squared times 1. Because you remember the box here, as I said, consists of 0, x0, and 2v0. So, and x0 is the variable I associated to v0. So they kind of look the same algebraically, but they're obtained totally in a totally different way. So the series, anyways, I just want to quickly write them down. They look something like this. I'm going to now replace the U parameters with the real parameter, so it's going to be something like this. Ah, can I do that? Okay, so I'll write this. Sorry for this. U1 m plus lambda 1 dot U2 m plus lambda 2 U3 m plus lambda 3 U0 minus 3m plus lambda 0. It's going to be this, and downstairs I have something like this. Oh, now I have, I'm sorry, these are X's now. Wait. Yes, these are X's. Right, so if I write everything then in terms of lambda, this is going to look like this. I'm going to combine these into a one parameter, so it's going to be z to the m plus lambda. While here, so again, this apparently has no chance of converging. However, note that if m is negative, as I said, the formal properties do the following thing. Lambda then will have a pole, which will sort of bring up a lambda to the cube term, which is zero in that, right? So all those terms are going to vanish. That's why this cohomology plays this magic role of cutting out exactly the part that we need. So in fact, this is really going to be a convergence series, and that we're going to converge around z equals zero. So, and the counterpart here, it's going to be, let me write it. Well, 2z to the m plus I5, there is no lambda here anymore, x0 to the I, and again, in this case, what's going to happen, so x0, that's the twisted sector, as we noted, it actually shows up like this, and this twisted sector, shows, as I said, that's by definition of these gamma series. This is all in the denominator. And what's going to happen, again, is, in this case, for m greater than 0, this term is going to be negative, so the whole thing is going to cancel out. So while this is convergent at z equals 0, this is convergent at z equals infinity. That's one thing. The other thing that, as I said, that checks out here, it's these coefficients, I over 5, are exactly these weights corresponding to the twisted sectors. So what this story shows us, in fact, is that the weights that correspond to the elements in the twisted sectors give exactly the monodromy corresponding to the mirror story at z equals infinity. So what happens here, for example, with a monodromy. So let me then finish this discussion, but I think I'm running out of. So what's the story here? We have z equals 0. So here, we see that we have this z5 monodromy, which the physicists have known for a long time. Well, I guess nowadays mathematicians know too this. Here, of course, that's a large complex structure point, so that's a maximal unipotent monodromy, and you can see this very easily. Why? What happens if you send z, this parameter, into e to the 2 pi I z? Well, if we look at this series here, the series phi gets multiplied to and for people who know more about this story, of course, this will correspond if we list this story through the whole discussion to the level of the derived category. Lambda, you remember, is the class of the hyperplane class. So this is exactly this operation of taking a sheaf in the derived category and twisting, or an element in the derived category, and twisting it by by O of 1. Right? So. Oh, I see, which is, okay, so, right, this is, this phase of this one, corresponding to this span. And the other one is just, C3, ocean out by C3. But again, the whole point is that, you know, people have known this for a long time. But there wasn't clear what to do with C3 over Z3. It's not much there. You Z3? I think just diagonally. No, I'm doing now the, not doing the quintic. I'm doing the,
so
right.
Yeah.
Yes, multiple diagonal. That's why actually I wanted to, oh, I said Z5. I'm sorry for this. This is a Freudian sleep. Sorry. Okay, so maybe there are fives. Oh, no. Sorry. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, no. Yeah, I should have written, but there were, anyways. Yeah, that this the kind of geometrically, this space is C3 over Z3. No, that you know that physicists have been telling us this thing, that if you do this, if you move in the scalar space, scalar moduli space, whatever that is, you can think actually symplectic. You can think about it as kind of doing some kind of symplectic reduction, in fact. So where, you know, that's maybe a more appropriate picture, but I think you still don't understand this using that story of the symplectic reduction. So anyways, you get these different phases depending on where you do the reduction. So, however, at this point, you know, as I said, there was not enough cohomology, if you want, just even to give an interpretation of these series. So these series, of course, they were known, but it was not clear how to relate them to anything geometrically at this point. So, and you know, this basically what this shows, as I said, is that, of course, this is an easy case. However, this generalizes to any toric variety of this sort. So now we know that what physicists call these hybrid phases, we can definitely compute exactly the monodromy around those points, and we know that they have to do with these weights in the that showed up in the twisted sectors, which again is not a big surprise, just the computations were not, I guess, orderly done or something like that. So okay, so where I think I like to I'm going to skip all the computations that I wanted to show. There is kind of a magic formula that... So, let me then just briefly talk about... Basically, for us, the story was, can we actually match this with anything in the derived category story? So, as I said in the beginning, in the we really are interested in doing writing down a Fourier Mukai functors like that. So, first of all, just briefly, what's a Fourier Mukai functor? Well, it's an equivalence of category, so let's call it maybe capital F. So in general, they're kind of defined by some objects so if you choose a good object, good though is not clear what it means here because it's quite so weird good properties, but I'm not going to go into that. It has to have very special properties, then such will define actually an equivalence of categories. I mean, so the whole art, if you want, is to actually find these objects such that they actually give equivalences. So if this has good properties, then this F is an equivalence. Well, so again, now think about the story actually goes through well with minor modifications. When X prime acquires these quotient singularities, so now I'm going to replace this by this. So this, of course, I forgot to give names here. Sorry for that. There, of course, Mukai, and then Bondal or Lov, I guess, and Bridgeland and many other people worked in here. And then when, at least for the Torrey case, but I think a bit more general, when X prime acquires quotient singularities, actually Kawamata showed that things go through. You can pretend that you don't know that you're working with stacks, and the theorems at least, the statements of the theorems will not change. So now, of course, you'll have to replace everything here by script. So this will be now the stack associated and the... Right, quotient singularity, that's what I said. I think he does. Yes. I think he does, because he works locally, basically. he works locally. So he's, I mean, no, but what you need to make clear what kind of stack this is. So, you know, he's very, I mean, this is very, he uses really the description of this resolution property, essentially the resolution property that the object, the sheaves here have. So otherwise, you're at the loss. Actually, you know, he, as I said, the statements are, you don't close your eyes, pretend they're the same, but the proofs are not easy at all. I mean, it's a, he did hard work to prove these. In so then, well, so what we did, we tried to, we actually verified these, I mean, it's not, it's kind of, again, very easy to see that the, exactly what these transformations that Kawamata has are going to be given exactly by our computation. So, in fact, things are a bit easier. The objects in this case are, let me erase this. Uh-oh, I can't. So let me. Excuse me? Yes. These objects? Yes, that's what I'm going to say now. So, you know, so the this was known by Fromm or Loeb, in fact, I think. Maybe Bondal. Yeah, Bondal too. In the case of a flopping contraction, so you have x prime smooth, both smooth. And so these are PNs with the normal bundles. O minus 1 to the n plus 1 was, of course, this is the known, maybe I shouldn't use Z here. Let's find another letter. X tilde. Then, so, you know, this diagram can be computed birationally like that, so that here these. And so what Bondal and Orlov shown have shown that is that in fact in this case the object is the structure sheaf. The object E we're talking about is the structure sheaf. Of this. So in other words, the transformation really is just pull back, push forward. Because the Fourier-Mukai, so in this case, the Fourier-Mukai functors is applied to something here. It's going to be, well, I guess again I messed up the notation. So that Px is not, let's call this Qx. No. They're just the exceptional loci, right? The flopping contraction. So the Fourier-Mukai transformation in this case is really just, so we want to go from x to x prime, right? So it's R this is an equivalence. So this is Bondal and Orlov. Well, what Kawamata generalized this result to the generalization of the flopping contractions for stacks And he showed, as I said, that if you follow blindly this recipe, things work out. And what we can definitely do is verify that those are exactly the transformations that we get, as I said, on that big diagram that I had on the mirror side. So, I see. The theorem is more general than Calabi-Yau. Maybe they have the K equivalent, I think, probably. Yes, definitely. But, right. So one more comment and that I'll finish. So what we hope to be able to do is actually to understand using this procedure the derived category of coherent sheaves on a toric variety, which at least to my knowledge, it's quite surprising to me, even smooth toric varieties. Smooth toric variety. This is not known algebraically, and would be really useful to have such a thing for many reasons. For example, one could then try to use this Bridgeland machinery in more involved examples. So Bondal-Orlov's result. The essential ingredient, in fact, here is that they understand what happens to the derived category when you move from x to x tilde. Basically, you change it in a very nice way. You just add one chunk of a subcategory defined by some by objects here. So it's quite nicely. So now, of course, this was in the smooth context. Now we have the machinery for the stacky context, so in principle we could start with a toric smooth variety, do these toric birational transformation up to something that is very simple, like a cone with, just a simplicial cone. That derived category we can definitely express, as I said, this paper of Katsarkov, Orlov, and Orwa, they do this. And so then we could try to understand what happens to the derived category under such a transformation. So if there is such a semi-orthogonal decomposition or something like that. But that's, again, nothing interesting to report there. So the other thing that I didn't say is, I erased the big diagram, I didn't talk about the K-theory part of this story, but that's quite important. In fact, we have to do quite a lot of computations in K-theory just because we want to avoid working with having to use Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch, which for at least to the, my knowledge, it's not clear how it works for the orbifold cohomology. But maybe it is. We're just afraid of getting in that direction. So, okay, thanks a lot. Sorry for going so long. So. Oh, because this is an example, this transformation from x to x prime is an example. If you look at the toric variety, ambient, or this non-compact one, is an example of such a transformation that I was describing on the x side. Well, their construction is not toric, per se. But what we're experimenting. We're doing experiments here. So we're just experimenting to understand the story for toric varieties, and then maybe No, this is a more general, well, I guess it's like this. So us and Bonda land or law, so. You mean here? Yeah, but I'm not going there, of course, because if I go there, then. No, actually, it's not that one.
Which one
you're talking
about? That. But you're the singular one. Which one
is it? It could be X prime. Not in Bondal over. In Bondal and Orlov's, but for.
No, I'm. Well, you call that sigma infinite,
X and X prime are. I mean, this is supposed to work in higher dimensions, of course, not necessarily, because then, you know, in lower dimensions, then. Right.
In your example, you're talking about O3 over CP2.
Right.
Right? And then your singular one is.
This. Right.
Following down the zero fraction,
mm-hmm.
Which is V3 divided by.
Right.
So that is the.
But the ones I'm going to get by doing these, moving in this toric moduli space, are always going to have quotients, are only going to have quotient singularities.
Right. So, you compute, when you go over that singularity, right? You go over a circle,
right.
That singularity, then you get monotony. So in this case, the same monotony, but the central singular is different. In this case, it's just ultimate double point singularity, which is not.
Yes, but this one is not a one of the points that I'm looking at as boundary points. It's never going to show up there. This point, if the singular is not quotient, is never going to show up as some of these boundary points where I'm able to write things. Yeah, but that's a quotient singularity, right?
But
that one is not going to, something like this is not going to happen. So, I mean, well, this there is an interpretation for these points, and this is interesting, but being combinatorics, I mean, you know, this for, well, there is a way with doing using the secondary polytope to give an interpretation to these points also, where you would take takes fan structures on the cone where you removed more things and you don't have just implicial fans. So there is an interpretation in combinatorial interpretation, but I don't know what to do with that in with the derived category. That's interesting, but anyways, that's another issue though. That's right, yes. No, I mean this is, you know, this is not the what I, you know, this, you know, I have a big paper which is now a 3-year-old, 4-year-old paper basically, which is mostly my thesis, which is it's on the net actually. It's not, So, well, but it's not well written. So it will be hard to delve there. Well, of course, this, I should say, this all goes back to Koncevich. Even this, he noticed this, that exactly the exponential of the monodromy. But I don't think it's written, I mean, as I said, it is in this, in my paper, which is on the archive. It's a kind of 100-page paper, so it's very combinatorial in that. So then I guess, let's see. I mean, the issue of, yeah, I can't think of. Seidel and Thomas have, but they're more concerned with other types of, they actually are concerned with, but, you know, there it's, they discuss examples, so it's easy to figure out. But they're only concerned, of course, with the Dirac category side. So they have their inspiration, of course, is on the other side. But they just mention it briefly, and it's kind of used in their other papers. So I guess that's, It's right, but I mean, the question is this. Maybe someone can, is this... Is this known as a result, or even, actually, even easier? How about X smooth toric variety? I'm sure this is known. Is it? Or is it even trivial? I don't think it's trivial, but... Ah, I see. That was... So then, of course, because the next question, what we need here is this. And do you know of anyone who, I mean... Right. That's what we do too. Right, I mean, yeah, but I mean, the question would be if we can get, you know, if you can get a, you know, like the cohomology, you have this Stanley-Reisner thing. Can you get some kind of combinatorial description, which is nice and, I mean, you know, coherent sheaves on this, the Lie Mumford stacks are going to be given by G equivariant sheaves on Z. So we can definitely work. I mean, this. So, yeah, we can work there, and just the combinatorics is kind of gets messy. And I see that the K theory people write these papers, which I don't quite understand, where they do this Merkuriev or spectral sequence, and they seem that there are cases when that collapses and cases when it doesn't collapse. So actually there was one, I think, a few days ago even, you know, so it seems that it's not kind of a general nice result which says that K-theory is represented one way. So there is some technical condition, so. But I think actually Vistoli has, now that I'm thinking, I think Vistoli has, and in the 90s, something like that, but
one out job. But it's a mess, so I'm almost reluctant to. But the ideas are there. I have some space. That's right. I mean, I made smaller pieces.
That one again, okay?
But the idea, it's easier to read, I think, than other places.
Tuesday one.
No, no, no.
People who